As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football League Show. Joey Barton is a Sherpa. Macaulay's gesture to young supporter is Trayvon. The Pilgrims press on. And life's a beach for Chris as Carlisle make managerial moves. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, I'm Matt Davis Adams. You may remember me from such Totally Football shows as the German Neil Warnock and the Buttock Region. With me today, our version of Itchy and Scratchy. First up, the former Shrimper Gunner and Gator. Is that what you were known as at Margate, Adrian Clark?
No one's ever called me Gator. No, that would be a bad nickname. I think I'd prefer to be called Itchy.
I quite like
if we're going down that route, Itchy like, and Scratchy. Yeah,
Gator like alligator, strong. Anyway, alongside Adrian, our Chief Ranger, Sam Parkin. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Matt. How you doing?
All right, thanks. Yeah, that Simpsons intro, by the way, was in praise of Tyrese Simpson's goal for Swindon and also just because I loved the Simpsons up until season 13 when it fell off a cliff. I digress. We should perhaps have introed you as Itchy and Statchy, though. Last time you were both on, Sam put the call out for producer Abby to create a musical montage of Adrian and his stats. Well, she's delivered. We can hear it now.
I'm a stat man. Got a quick stat that might interest you. Something called passes per defensive action. The data is very strong. Stat man. During that opening half hour, they're the worst team in League One. And they've got the worst expected goals against from open play. They've faced the fewest shots per 90 in the division. I swallowed some stats this week and had a look at shot ending high turnovers. The shot count was 0-14. Yeah, and I got a stat.
Pleased with that?
I quite liked it, yeah. Yeah, the stat man. Good work, Abby. I don't know how long that took her, but fair play. Yeah. I've swallowed some more, so yeah, ready yourself.
Sam, did you have a standout moment from the weekend? I know you were at Forest Green Swindon. I suppose seeing your old boys plunder a fine victory will be high up there.
Yeah, right up there. No, I loved it because I think that was one of my first jobs for television post retirement, Forest Green Swindon, and they won 2-0 on that occasion as well. So just good to be there. Good atmosphere. I enjoy going to Forest Green, to be honest, even if it wasn't against one of my old clubs. Sampled the vegan hot dog and a vegan croissant, which wasn't as good as the hot dog, shall I say.
Yeah, hot dog's easier to get right than stuff with butter in, I would assume. Anyway, No championship action this weekend. There are a couple of news items worth bringing your attention to, though. EFL chairman Rick Parry says Premier League B-teams in the EFL won't be a thing, but the 3pm blackout could be done away with. Derby's administrators are hopeful of finding a buyer for the stricken club, which is good news, but it might be Mike Ashley, which is probably not very good news. Meanwhile, their administrators are appealing the Rams' 12-point deduction. Good luck with that. Elsewhere, posh boss Darren Ferguson has been given a one-match touchline ban after being found guilty of swearing at an official. What would his dad say? something profane, no doubt. Coventry's Matt Godden's been given a two-game ban for that shocking dive against Fulham last week. Barnsley have closed the East Stand at Oakwell due to safety concerns. It's the only original stand left from where the ground was built 130 years ago. And Ben Brereton Diaz scored again for Chile. They beat Paraguay 2-0. Clarky, I saw a tweet from Archie Rintut, the journalist, today saying who's going to play Ben Brereton Diaz in the film of his life. With every goal that he scores for Chile, we're getting closer to that being a reality, I think.
We are, aren't we? It is a brilliant story. And he's rising to every occasion that comes his way, isn't he? I mean, this was a guy that was pretty much a sub for Blackburn Rovers, a very average Blackburn Rovers side. He's added the Diaz and all of a sudden there's a bit of swashbuckle about him and he can't stop scoring. So no, brilliant. It's, good luck to him. I love that. And isn't that part of why we love football so much? Nothing is truly predictable. A lot of things are. You can see them coming a mile off. But every now and again, something random surprises you. And I think Ben Brereton Diaz, the name, and Ben Brereton Diaz, the form player, is a real surprise.
Yeah, good to know that somebody's had some success by adding a suffix to their last name. Sam, a two-match ban for diving for Matt Godden. On the one hand, I'm thinking that's really good that that's actually been punished, but is two games a little bit harsh?
No, I don't think so. It's a good deterrent for anyone who's thinking about doing it in games. I think that players have probably got away with it for too long. I didn't like the penalty award at the game I was at, actually, Forest Green Swindon. That was a different type of gamesmanship, if that's the right terminology, leaving the leg in, which I think has crept into the game in the last few years, which is something I don't like either. So, no, if it can have a positive impact and stop people from fooling the officials, then it's a positive.
Yeah, look, I'm all for it. Definitely, because we want to eradicate diving and two games is definitely a big enough deterrent. But I feel a little bit like he's been singled out. It was the game on the telly and we all saw it. Lots of people were talking about it. But I'd like to see a little bit more effort being made to penalise other players that dive every single weekend and don't seem to get the same punishment. So I think Coventry fans might feel a little bit aggrieved because there are far more dives out there than those that are being punished, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if that precedent is followed for future cases. Right, after this brief interlude, we'll chat through the weekend's League One action.
So, Mr. Bielsa, what's troubling you?
Well, doctor,
my translator is constantly undermining me. Last week, I told everyone to take five and get an ice cream, but he told them to run laps and practice their shooting.
Sometimes it seems they don't know what they're doing, but with Paddy Power, you always know you're getting top draw rewards. If one leg of your bet builder on a football game lets you down, get your money back as a free bet. Paddy Power.
Pre-match bet builder bets only. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. Min 4 plus legs. Min odds 1/5 per leg. Online exclusive. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League One headlines, Plymouth and Wickham take advantage of others not playing to go top and second respectively. Ipswich are on the up after taming the Shrews and in Yorkshire, Owls feasted on Trotters. Now let's start though with the new leaders in League One. Over now to our Plymouth Argyle expert, Adrian Clark.
Plymouth. I worry a little bit for Plymouth. They ended the season really badly, didn't they? They plummeted quite badly. And I rate Ryan Lowe, but I don't know. I don't think they've had enough of a sort of revamp this summer to make me think they're going to be that good. So, Plymouth may struggle.
Many thanks to listener Andy Simmons for pointing that out. We all do it, Clarky, in fairness. And I think the thing is with this, I mean, you tick them for relegation, which is totally different. But the fact we didn't have them amongst our promotion contenders, was that maybe as much about the quality elsewhere in the division as it was about Plymouth. You know, all the big names in League One this season, Plymouth are always going to be a bit far down the rankings in terms of promotion talk.
So, yeah, look, total hands up on that one. But no one would have been tipping Plymouth for top two, maybe not even top six, not even their own fans. They won two of their last 15 league games. So I think on the back of a team losing two of the last 15 games, you're entitled to predict that they might struggle, but well done to them. The overhaul that has happened has been impressive, and the players that have come in have been excellent. So, yeah, well done. Well done to Plymouth. They're a good attacking side. Play some lovely football in that 3-5-2. Both into the pitch are working great. So, no, Plymouth Argyle, I got you wrong. I wish you all the very best for the rest of the season. But, yeah, it's a long season, and other squads in the division definitely run a bit deeper than Plymouth's.
Here's their midfielder, Jordan Howson, winning the award for generic post-match tweet of the week. He says, all caps, big, three lowercase points, praise emoji. What an atmosphere. Enjoy your weekend, Green Army. Three green heart emojis. They're on the longest unbeaten run in the EFL. Only Liverpool have played more matches without losing any. What they do have, Sam, which maybe could have tipped us off as to why they're doing so well, is a manager who knows how to get promoted. Ryan Lowe's done so in two of his three full seasons as a gaffer. Do you think that he's got enough to get them up and around playoffs, automatic promotion come May?
Yeah, I don't think anyone will be getting carried away. I think the playoffs will be an exceptional achievement. As Clarkey just said there about the shape, when you look at the calibre of player that's been brought in and the type of player, it's probably to fit that system. And I don't think we can say that about the recruitment at a lot of clubs in the EFL, but I think he's gone and cherry-picked some really good players. I think Scar's been a brilliant signing. Broom, who was on loan at Burton last year, gets his maiden goal this season for Plymouth. I think Agard, in the absence of Jeffcott, showed that he'll be a really good deputy for him. Obviously, Jeffcott and Hardy have been, you know, one of the success stories of the season so far. They've got it's a nice combination because they're very different players. So, and when I saw Plymouth last year, they are a good side. They weren't getting the results. And obviously, you know, coming into this season, they weren't one of the fancy teams because there's sides with bulkier squads and probably better budgets running, you know, in League One this season. So it is a surprise, but I do like the 11. I think they've got Ennis to come back in. Obviously, Danny Mayer's not played too much football, so there is some players in reserve. And, you know, I would say now the playoffs is a really realistic proposition.
Yeah, no, they're an excellent side. And in a 3-5-2, if you're going to play that system, you need those wing-backs to be great at both ends of the pitch. And I think that they are. I mean, Connor Grant has been superb, very creative player, scored a goal in this game. Got a great left foot. And on the other side, it was interesting that captain Joe Edwards was on the bench and Jordan Garrick on loan from Swansea played there and was outstanding. Great engine as well. So when they get the ball wide and they make that pitch big, Plymouth Argyle, they're a real handful to play against.
Difficult game for Burton, Sam, but they're still in the top half of the league, but they've only won once since August. That's not sustainable, is it? They're going to start tumbling down the table if they don't find a way to rectify that form soon.
Yeah, and the clean sheets have kind of deserted them as well. I think it's none in six games now. And I think I spoke on Thursday's pod about them setting up a bit conservatively in games, and I felt this was the case here. They could have been completely blown away by Plymouth in that first half, and if it wasn't for some intelligent changes at halftime. I think he kind of matched them up in the shape and made a change. Harry Chapman coming on had a real influence in the game. If maybe that would have done from the outset, or they hadn't have been, you know, so reluctant to get bodies forward in the first half, this could have been a different outcome. So food for thought, I would say, from the second half performance, which was very good. And on another day would have seen them, you know, leaving Plymouth with a point. But I think with the attacking quality he's got now, you know, players to come off the bench, Hemmings and Akins, both really good goal threats, League One level, they should be doing better in front of goal. And We'll have to wait and see if that turns, especially because the other end isn't as watertight as it has been.
Let's move on. A close run thing between Sheffield Wednesday and Bolton Wanderers at Hillsborough. The home side came out on the right side of a 1-0 scoreline, thanks to Lee Gregory's goal midway through the second half. Adrian, you along with 23,000 others were on hand to witness it live. Were Wednesday worth the win?
It was a really even game. It was a strange match. I thought we saw some good football and some bad football. It really fluctuated. Sheffield Wednesday were definitely second best up until they scored. Bolton created most of the better chances. They definitely played some nice football. Really slick Bolton when you see them live, moving the ball quickly. But their end product was pretty woeful actually on the day. Sheffield Wednesday, I'm still trying to work out what their style is, what the philosophy is. They sort of fall in between a couple of styles really. What I thought on the day was that when they got the ball forward earlier to the front three, they looked more dangerous and they unsettled Bolton. Lee Gregory was really good. I thought he was probably the man of the match. Real handful. We know he's industrious, he'd always graft, and he did that and he deserved his goal. It was a lovely ball in from Jack Hunt and he tucked it home nicely. But yeah, he deserved it. But I didn't think tactically either manager was very good on the day. Sheffield Wednesday went for back three. Darren Moore changed it at half time. They got worse, but then they scored and then they changed it back. And as for Ian Evert, he made a triple change midway through the second half, and Bolton were terrible on the back of it. They offered nothing in the last 20 minutes. Wednesday held out comfortably. So, it was kind of match that I think neither manager would have been fully satisfied with. I did speak to our favourite son here on the Totally Football League Show, Joe Crilly, afterwards, big Bolton fan, of course. Afterwards, I was talking about how good the football was up until the last bit. And he said, Clarky, that's what we are. All fart, no shit.
That is a very Joe Crilly quote. Missy Joe. On his Bolton, Sam, lost three of their last five games and they've been against teams that will be contending for promotion. Rotherham, Sunderland and now Wednesday, you might think that they're in that category. They haven't managed a goal in any of those matches either. Is it a worry that they can't get a result against the teams kind of in and around them, to use a nonsense football phrase?
Yeah, if they've got aspirations of being promoted this season, I think that's a big ask. You know, despite how much admiration I've got for them and the type of job that Ian Evert's doing, because I think they do play some brilliant stuff. But the goal scoring is an issue, because I watched the exact same game against Sunderland, but because they created a few more chances there than they did at Hillsborough. But, you know, this has happened there. It's happened at Cambridge where they were well beaten. It's a reoccurring theme. They've conceded first in 9 of their 12 games, which says to me that there is a little bit of a problem. Are they not able to break down deep line defences? Have they not got enough good finishers? And Owen Doyle has been brilliant in the lower tier consistently, but do they need someone to just carry that burden with him? And that's what I reckon they'll probably try and do if they were to bring some bodies in January, because Delfonso, Bakayoko, the other options, not really out and out number nines for me. So, yeah, I think it's something that we're going to see continue until maybe Ian Evert's allowed to do some wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, Doyle was off the pace in this game. Everything that sort of came towards him, he was just hesitant, didn't quite come off for him. Yeah, I was surprised in a sense he didn't get taken off sooner. But when Bakayoko came on, all they wanted to do was put longer balls into the box and cross it for him. And they stopped playing the football that they played when Doyle was the sort of mobile focal point. So, yeah, I think, yeah, Doyle didn't have his best day. I'll tell you what, Afa Lion, seeing him in the flesh was interesting. Really powerful player, skips past opponents with ease. But in this particular game, it was that final decision that was off from him. But he's a real handful. And I think he's going to be integral to their prospects of the playoffs this season.
Now, we make no secret of our fondness for all things Wickham Wanderers on this pod. And so it was heartwarming to see the Chair Boys extend their record-breaking 7-match winning streak at Adams Park. They saw off Gillingham by 2-0. This one all over after 7 minutes, following goals from Gareth McCleary and Brandon Hanlon. Might have been different, Clarkie, had Verdane Oliver not skied that penalty, which maybe should have been retaken. Looked like there was a Wickham player in the box to me. But overall, another fairly comfortable win for Wickham, who take advantage of others not playing and continue to rise up the table.
Yeah, doing well, aren't they? On their own patch, that's for sure. Look, yeah, even Steve Evans said, no complaints. We lost to the better team, didn't have enough quality. So yeah, if he'd have scored that penalty for Dane Oliver, yeah, they might have had a bit of momentum, might have shifted. But no, this match was, I think, exactly how you might have expected it. They're the two sides with the lowest average possession in League One. They're in the top three when it comes to aerial duels won. So loads and loads of long balls, headers, second balls. And the first goal actually came from a goal kick flicked on by Sam Vokes, and it was tucked away by McCleary. So it was that kind of game. Neither team wins awards for aesthetics, but Wickham really, really effective. Good luck to them. The only thing I'd say is with Wickham, they're right up there, aren't they, in the promotion mix. Look who they've beaten. Every win so far has come against a team in 11th or below. All of the points that they've dropped have come to sides in the top seven at the moment. So that's the one little question mark over Wickham. Can they go and beat the division's best on a consistent basis? We'll have to wait and see.
Not loads of drama in the game, but plenty off the pitch. Wickham tweeting, could the owner of a white Mercedes return to your car in the upper tier? Your handbrake is off and the car park's on a hill. There was a positive update on this later, though. We have closure on the Mercedes story. Wedged in place by two traffic cones for the duration of the afternoon, the car was retrieved by its owner, who drove home happy after a record-breaking victory. So that's nice to hear. Now, on Thursday's show, Sam called Ipswich's game with Shrewsbury a must-win, and with Parkin's words ringing in their ears, the Tractor boys harvested 3 points from their game with Shrewsbury at Portman Road. Sam, does this give them some hope for the future? One defeat in five, we said maybe automatic's gone, but if they carry on like this, they'll keep moving up the table and playoffs should still be more than achievable.
Yeah, I think vital to win when your rivals aren't playing, and you know this makes them just 6 points away from the playoff pack now. So it wasn't a brilliant performance. Paul Cook was quite scathing after the game, really, despite, in his words, the best 23 minutes of the season, you know, up to the point that Connor Chaplin scored. But yet to concede again, and I read the stat, like six times in all comps that they've gone in front and conceded within the next 11 minutes, 5 minutes on this occasion. So there's something there, but I don't know, I feel that Ipswich have been quite unlucky this year because they are conceding a hell of a lot of goals, especially at home. And I think the shots against only Rotherham have conceded fewer shots, which just says to me that people are scoring worldies, probably like Wally did at the weekend. And, you know, the goalkeepers, I think, have made the fewest saves as well at Ipswich Town. So something doesn't add up right now. And I felt that despite it not being the best performance, you know, 72% of the ball, obviously, you know, 608 passes to 242, it feels like they've got that confidence now, especially at Portman Road. And part of that as well is Macaulay Bonn, who's just having one of those periods where everything he touches is flying into the net. He's 8-7 now, 9 for the season. You know, kind of, I'm sure he put a lot of pressure on himself, given that it's a club that means so much to him as well. And I don't think he's always looked the most confident in front of goal. He looks to me as like someone who misses the odd chance and it kind of plays on his mind. So he is somehow, I think, mentally in a brilliant place right now, where you would maybe have expected him to go there and feel extra pressure, considering it means so much. So he's in a great place, and Shrewsbury had to be dispatched at the weekend because they're really poor right now. I think they've got a number of issues, and yeah, going forward for them, they're pretty lackluster. So it was a game they had to win.
Yeah, following up on what Sam said, I've got another stat that might reassure Ipswich Town fans a little bit. It completely backs up Sam's point. Expected goals against in open play, it's a good measure of how you know you're set up defensively. They've got the best record. They've only been expected to concede 5 goals in open play so far. They've let in 13. which is just ridiculous. There's no disparity like it right across any of the divisions. So they've been conceding worldies. They've been conceding from bad mistakes. I think, yeah, Ipswich aren't in as bad a state as some people think.
We mentioned Macaulay Bond there, a big good work fella to him. He celebrated his winner with 13-year-old Town supporter Maddie, who he presented with a new Ipswich shirt earlier in the week after hers was ripped by medics performing an emergency operation on her. One other note from that game, Shrewsbury striker Ryan Bowman spent the night in hospital after suffering from heart palpitations during the game. We wish him a speedy recovery. Right, Abby, give us some odds, please. Paddy Power, who have they got in those hallowed top two spots in League One come the end of the season? Is it Plymouth?
It is not Plymouth. No, they are way, way down at 12-1 to finish in the top two. So, you know, Clarkie may still yet be right. But it is Sunderland and Wigan who are in the top two. It's not a surprise to hear that. Sunderland 6-5, Wigan 15-8, and then Rotherham the third option in at 12-5. We did just talk about Shrewsbury there, so worth noting that them and Doncaster are the most likely to be relegated at 5-6 with Crewe. Currently, Paddy Power have Crewe as the third team in that relegation spot, 11-10.
Thanks, Abby. We'll pay a visit to League Two next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Because you're a listener of the Totally Football League Show, you can get a third off an Athletic subscription right now. All you need to do is head to theathletic.com/league show. That's theathletic.com/league show.
Into your headlines, FGR stay top, but they're only a point clear after they lose and Harrogate hits Scunny for six. Simon Weaver's team now the joint highest scorers in the EFL with Fulham. Saturday saw them hit six in League Two for the first time and in front of a record attendance at Wetherby Road. Elsewhere, Swindon go into the automatic places at Vale's expense. Bristol Rovers are up to 16th after scoring three in a game for the first time. Salford are 17th. Gary Goyer. And it's beach ball deflated as Chris is shown the door at Carlisle. The Sky cameras on hand to see Forest Green Rovers and Swindon Town square off on Saturday lunchtime. Sam's old mob, Swindon, got the W. As we mentioned, though, FGR do stay top despite the defeat. Sam, particularly impressive from Swindon, given they had five players on international duty, but still went to the league leaders and won.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive. I think probably only two of those guys would have started in terms of the ones that were away. And to be honest, I was concerned about Ward coming in goal for Wallacott, who's been exceptional, but didn't have to be concerned at all because of he had a superb game, you know, capped it by saving a penalty at the end. So, yeah, testament to goalkeeping coach probably keeping him wide in, ready to step in and put in a performance like that. But no, I said before the game that I honestly felt what was about to unfold would the outcome would probably be dictated by Jamil Matt, because I think he's that important. Him and Stephen's relationship, obviously, up front for Forest Green's been sublime so far. But I thought that the back three handled him brilliantly. I felt the two wing backs of Forest Green couldn't really impact the game too much. So, again, well done to Ellis Iandolo and Rob Hunt, who came in on the right hand side of Swindon's back five for Kessler Hayden, who was away with England. So they stopped Forest Green. They had a few chances for Aitchison. So it could have been different. He had two big moments. So I'd be interested to see if he remains in the side because he was in the place of Ebu Adams. But no, I felt defensively they were very good. And I was a little bit critical at half-time of Swindon going forward because I just felt it was a bit off the cuff. There wasn't much plan. But I thought that unpredictability in the end won the game because Harry McCurdy was the match winner. He had a free roll to go wherever he pleased. And I think it was that unpredictability that kind of cost Forest Green with the first goal. He makes a run into the box, not really too sure from a Forest Green perspective who's supposed to be picking him up. And Ben Gladwin's delivery, if anyone gets the chance to watch it back, it's not just put into an area. That's Ben Gladwin picking out the one red shirt who's made a dart into the box because he's that good with the ball. And McCurdy finished it well. But from that point on, I felt that there was only going to be one winner, really. Swindon looked more threatening going forward and more solid defensively. So it was a really impressive performance. Whether it's sustainable, I doubt, just because of the depth. I thought it was a brilliant performance. And, you know, it could happen again. They could go on a run with that front two. But I feel that if they're in a position come January, one or two smart acquisitions could make it a real season to remember.
Sam mentioned sustainability there. Forest Green Rovers flashed up climate emergency warnings during the match on their LED boards. Clark, it's just an anomaly, I'm sure you love a stat, but both Forest Green's defeats this season have been 2-0 at home. You would expect them to put this behind them fairly quickly, but it's a concern that those defeats have come at home. They've got Scunthorpe away next, which is quite a nice fixture to get back on the horse.
Yeah, it feels like a gimme, doesn't it, Scunthorpe at the moment? No, I wouldn't be concerned. I really wouldn't. Forest Green have been excellent until this point. Been keeping lots and lots of clean sheets. And they've been scoring tons of goals. They just come up against a really well-oiled Swindon machine in this game. And that happens. And an inspired goalkeeper. I don't think there's any need to really have a forensic investigation into what went wrong here. It's one of those days where the opposition turn up. And I may be even more optimistic than Sam about Swindon. I just think, how well have they done, given that they basically had no pre-season? Everyone talks about, oh, managers need pre-seasons and getting players up to speed, pre-season's this, pre-season's that. Ben Garner came in, I think, a couple of weeks to go to the season and not many players, yet here they are in the autumn. And again, stats-wise, they're up there. Most open play shots in the division. Most long passing sequences. So that's 10 passes or more put together at once. They've had 121 of those, Swindon. The next closest is 77, Salford and Tranmere. That is an incredible difference. So they're playing with real cohesion and confidence to pop the ball around. And I think it's been a triumph of coaching really so far from Ben Garner. Job's not done, more to do, but they're going in a great direction.
Yeah, it's now 13 goals they've scored in second halves of games and just one in the opening 45 minutes. And we were trying to get our heads around it on Saturday. And we actually felt that it was a game plan to have a slightly deeper defensive line in the first half and almost see what Forest Green have got and then step up the tempo in the second period, press higher with the aforementioned two strikers. And the energy difference between the two sides in that second period was so evident. And I don't know if this was anomaly in terms of the game plan given the opposition or if this is the way they've been setting up away from home, but it just felt that they ran all over Forest Green in the second half. So yeah, to back Clarkey up, not only is he recruited a really good squad in a short space of time, but he seems to know exactly what he's doing on the training ground, Ben Garner, to completely contradict old Joey Barton's comments in the last 2 weeks.
We'll get to Joey Barton shortly, but the game of the day, no doubt about it, in League Two came at Gander Green Lane. The sensational Sutton story continues. Kobe Rowe, the stoppage time hero, as the home side clinched a 4-3 victory against Port Vale in what was Sutton manager Matt Gray's 100th match in charge. Unbelievable this, Sam. You know, you think that they didn't win any of their opening five games, have now won five of their last six. They're in a playoff position with a game in hand. Incredible turnaround.
Yeah, they're absolutely flying. And if you think back to the games they've lost, I think they gave an amazing account of themselves on the opening day at Forest Green. They should never have been beaten by Oldham at home. They went searching for the winner at 1-1 and got done with a sucker punch. And they lost 2-0 at Exeter, which I think is the only time they've lost by more than one goal. So They've been in absolutely every game. This was a show of great grit and resilience, tinged with some good fortune, you have to say, because it sounded like Port Vale absolutely kind of bopped them around in the first 20 minutes, half an hour. So they got a deflected goal. There was obviously a bit of good fortune with a couple of the other goals as well in terms of defensive mistakes and an own goal from Garrity. So they rode their luck a little bit, I think, in this game. But I thought it was really interesting listening to Matt Gray changing the tactics. They obviously, you know, are quite a direct side. I think they've had the least passes in the division by some way, the least completed short passes anyway. So they can go long, but I just felt it was really interesting saying that he was really hot on them switching the play in that second half, getting 2v1s, fullbacks getting higher up the pitch. So, you know, tactically, change one or two things and they get another 3 points. So they're going brilliantly. And we've seen it before. We're seeing it now with Harrogate as well, despite, you know, them having obviously a little bit longer in the league. But Sutton, it feels like, are going to continue to surprise people, and who knows? I think it would be a hell of a shout to say they're going to be in the playoffs. But you know, it's been a brilliant start to the season.
Not much difference, is there, Clarkey, between the top end of the National League and League Two? It would appear.
No, I think the gap's even smaller now than it was when I was a player. Yeah, most of the teams in the National League are full time, aren't they? So yeah, no, not much of a jump at all. And yeah, Sutton are making a great fist of it. They really are. It's just awkward to play against, aren't they? You see the long throws from both fullbacks. They'll put the balls into the box and ask questions. They've got a big tall centre forward. Set plays are obviously huge for them. So, yeah, if you're not at it, if you don't work hard enough to stop balls coming into your box, and maybe Port Vale didn't work hard enough in the second half of this game, then Sutton will punish you. I've played against so many teams down the years like this. Sam probably has too, where they're just awkward and they're big and they're strong and they just ask questions of you. And yeah, Sutton are one of those teams that are going to produce upset after upset, I think, this season by playing this way.
Last game we're going to look at saw Bristol Rovers ease the pressure on Joey Barton while simultaneously bringing to an end the reign of Chris Beach's Carlisle gaffer. Rovers winning 3-0 in this one. Sam pointed us in the direction of Joey Barton's pre-match quotes, which were given to the Bristol Rovers YouTube channel. They were quite something. He said, "He'd been to church last week and had a good hour alone with my thoughts. I realised I've been sent here to help this football club out of the doldrums." Sent here to Bristol rather than to church, I think he meant. He then added, "I know how to get up high mountains, to be a Sherpa. That's my job, to lead young lads up footballing mountains they didn't think they were capable of." Sam, it sounds like he's hoping that he's created an atmosphere where he's a friend first, a boss second, and what, probably an entertainer third.
I think we've always known that he's probably had a Desiree quote or two on his office wall, haven't we? Certainly since he's been a manager anyway. Yeah, I mean, he's trying everything and came good for him at the weekend. I noticed pre-match that he said he was going to use Brett Pittman in a different way this weekend. So I think, oh, maybe he's going to play as a number 10, like he did for Kenny Jackett a few times. Didn't get off the bench. So, wonder how Brett's feeling this week, if that was a bit of kidology maybe for the opposition manager. But yeah, he was the full guy in it, wasn't he? But yeah, just, you know, I've not watched this game, but I think looking at the two wide boys or the supporting forward players in Anderson and Saunders and Collins up there. We know how good he was at Forest Green previously. Yeah, I think just loads of mobility in that front line, maybe a slightly different way about going about it. Evans is a player I've always liked. Anthony Evans, watching him in Everton's under 23s. He's got a bit more guile, I would suggest, than the other three. So there's a decent balance there. And I think finally, really well backed up by Coots and Whelan. Coots certainly has been coming in for some flack when I've been doing my research the last few weeks, but it looked like he was really at the forefront of some of their stopping the opposition and also starting Bristol Rovers' attack. So it's a big win. Not going to get carried away considering the opposition, but it is a big win because it was much needed for Bristol Rovers against a struggling side. And it was almost as if, you know, the manager who suffered defeat in this match was going to come under enormous pressure, and that's how it's proved.
Yes, absolutely. Quick shout out to Sam Nicholson, his second goal. For me, the most aesthetically pleasing type of goal you can get in football when it's low and it rolls all the way around the net from one post to the other. Absolute thing of beauty. So Carlisle then, Clarkie, they fired up the corner flag JPEG. Their statement said, Carlisle United Football Club can confirm that head coach Chris Beach has left with immediate effect. Gavin Skelton and Eric Kinder will take temporary charge of first team affairs. The club would like to thank Chris for his efforts over the past 2 years and will provide further updates in due course. We always sympathise with somebody when they lose their job, but we can't say that this was a surprise. It feels like it's been coming for quite a long time.
It was inevitable. Four losses in the last five, and the fans growing ever more disillusioned, really, with Chris Beach and the type of football that they were playing. Where I do have sympathy is over the recruitment. So in the summer, they lost lots of good players. They lost their keeper, Farman, I think Tanner, Hayden, Bennett, Patrick, Zanzala, Coyote. Players right down the spine of the field. And the ones that have come in are not really of the same standard. And Carlisle do have a director of football, someone that really is in charge of the wheeling and dealing side of it, David Holdsworth. And I just feel that he maybe hasn't helped his manager with some of the decisions that were made. So yeah, I do have a little bit of sympathy, but results wise, it's not been good. And the football hasn't been very exciting either. I mentioned earlier that Swindon had made 121 sequences of 10 or more passes. Carlisle have made 5. I mean, 5. I mean, it's an embarrassment. You can't keep the ball for 10 passes over that period of time. That tells you there's low on confidence. The quality of the football is not great. They're not scoring enough goals. They're not keeping clean sheets. So look, they had to do something, I guess. But whoever comes in has got quite a big job, I think, to get their own identity on the team. And to work with the players at their disposal, because I do think this squad is significantly weaker than the one that was flying pre-pandemic.
Yeah, really big job based on those stats. Sam, I had a quick look at the runners and riders according to the bookies. Gavin Skelton, the caretaker, is among the early favourites. John McGreal, Paul Tisdale in there too. Can I interest you in 50-1 on Jimmy Glass?
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? He was on loan from Swindon, I'll have you know, at that point when he scored the goal. That would be nice. I don't know. I think, anyway, he did brilliantly for a period last year, didn't he, Chris Beach? But it feels like they need someone to go in there and, I don't know, revamp the place a little bit with a bit more of a plan. It's felt that they've been in the doldrums for a while now. Completely agree with Clarkie, with the players. And what he's been left with as well is, I mean, the midfield we've always liked, Alessandro, yeah. Guy and Mellish is not bad. And I think, you know, all of them have produced good performances. Maybe not, you know, completely consistently, but a good midfield three. I mean, such a youthful back five, you know, two really young centre-halves, inexperienced. And Young, the centre-forward on loan from Villa at the moment. So I think really important positions on the pitch. They haven't got any depth, really. And at the moment, they're having to call upon really young guys to try and get them some points. So it's going to be a big job for someone. I saw Danny Granger, a former teammate of mine, former Carlisle player, being linked, but he punched me in the face off the ball once. So I won't be speculating that he should be given the gig. But yeah, I don't know. Just someone with maybe a bit more managerial experience, someone maybe that's showcased a style of play at a previous club, to go in there and be consistent in the way that the team wants to play. Because I thought last year they were exciting for a period. This year, as Clarkie says, it's been very direct and to no great success.
I'm just having a look on Google Maps, Adrian. Sol Campbell, I believe, lives in Northumberland. Hour and 25 from there to Carlisle. Seems doable. He might be a contender.
I'd love to see Sol back in. I really would. Yeah, he loves a challenge, doesn't he? Macclesfield and Southend United on his CV. I mean, blimey, he's a glutton for punishment. And Carlisle fans will tell you that the current ownership, they're not much better than those two clubs that we're talking about here. There's a lot of frustration at a lack of ambition from the current ownership. So it sounds like it's right up Sol's street, to be honest. But yeah, they need a manager that can put their own imprint on the team really, really quickly and get them believing in something. Because at the moment, the fans don't believe in the ownership. They don't like the director of football and they hate the style of football. So there's a lot of things that need altering.
Other than that, though, things are looking rosy. Abby, let's get some odds on the League Two relegation picture. Carlisle are placing 2 points above the bottom two at the moment. So presumably they feature prominently in this section.
Yeah, they're the fourth favourites for relegation, according to Paddy Power. 6-1 for Carlisle to go down. It's Scunthorpe and Oldham, though, unsurprisingly, they are occupying those two relegation spots. Scunthorpe 10-11, Oldham 11-8, and Walsall are the third favourites at 4-1.
Thanks, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Right, before we go, let's dust off the old soccer base inspired Parky and Clarky quiz, shall we? As last time, your questions pertain to the other's career. So, Sam, you're going first. Here's your question. We all remember the 28th of March 1997 as my 15th birthday. It was also the day that Adrian was a part of a Southend side that lost 3-0 at Tranmere. The Tranmere team that day featured two current EFL managers. You can get a point for each. Name those managers.
Dave Challoner.
Spot on. He is rubbing his temples, listener, to try and push that knowledge to the front.
Keep rubbing, Sam. Come on. It's going to come to you.
Challoner's correct.
I'm going to go for... it's going to be obvious. I can't think. All I can see is John Aldridge and Pat Nevin. But I'm going to go for Mickey Mellon. Did he play for Tranmere?
Oh, he did, but he wasn't playing in this particular game.
Close. Great effort.
Can you remember, Clarkey?
Nah, I know.
Give us a clue.
I didn't even start to think about it. I was just leaving that to Sam. That
big
was,
friend of the show.
Cookie.
Yeah, Paul Cook.
Yeah,
wouldn't have got that. Yeah.
All right, well, you got one, Sam, so you're in with a chance. Adrian, here we go. Boxing Day 2004 saw Sam score for Swindon in a 2-0 win at Peterborough. In the posh side that day were a former world record holder and a midfielder who would go on to become British light welterweight champion. Point for each, please. I'm so pleased with this question, by the way. It took me a long time to come up with it, but when I did, wow.
Leon McKenzie?
Right. Nope. Good guess, but not right.
Curtis Woodhouse?
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you half a point for that. Who's the world record holder? Or was. It was taken from him.
Was it?
It was actually taken from him by Dave Challoner and then by somebody else subsequently.
Oh, come on. So long throw specialist. Is it a Welsh? Is it someone that's Welsh?
Correct.
Yeah. going to need more than a vague description of their nationality.
I played against him when he was at Cardiff, I'm sure of it.
There's a certain irony to his world record given his name.
No. It's not going to happen. Go on.
Sam, for the steal and to really rubber stamp your victory.
I'll have Curtis Woodhouse and Andy Legg.
Correct. World's longest throw-in for a time. Andy Legg. What about that, eh? The opposite of nominative determinism, you might say. Well done, listener, if you stuck around right to the end, particularly for that bit. Well done to Sam for winning the quiz as well. Thanks to Adrian and to Abby for their help this week and to you for listening. We'll be back on Thursday when we'll be previewing the return of the Championship and more. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @thetotallyshow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/league show. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.